Doctor Who Short Trips, Foreshadowing by Julian Richards, read by India Fisher. The lieutenant sighed. He'd been looking forward to getting some shut-eye, but he knew, he just knew, that there was no way he was going to get to sleep tonight. It was bad enough that a fighter jet had gone missing during a routine training flight. That in itself was enough to warrant the alert level the base was experiencing. But now they had two intruders. Intruders! Actual intruders who had actually managed to actually intrude into a restricted area of a secure RAF base. That sort of thing shouldn't happen. In fact, up until now, the lieutenant had been sure it couldn't happen. The group captain was still on the phone to London. That meant the job of finding out how it happened and making sure it didn't happen again fell squarely on the lieutenant. He had a feeling that it wasn't going to be the easiest assignment he'd ever had. The warrant officer had said that the intruders had been found standing over Corporal Harris. Thankfully, Harris wasn't dead, although the warrant officer refused to say what had actually happened to him. He just insisted that the lieutenant needed to see for himself, and ought to do so before he interrogated the prisoners. So the lieutenant had duly made his way to sickbay to see Harris. Corporal Harris was sat up in bed, and the lieutenant immediately understood why the warrant officer had wanted him to see for himself. Even though Harris saluted, the lieutenant would never have identified him as one of the base personnel. "How are you feeling, Corporal?" he asked, feeling very silly as he did so. Harris informed him that he'd quite like a drink of water and that he was feeling sleepy. The lieutenant hoped this meant that he was all right in all other respects. "What happened to you?" he asked.
"There was a big bug," Harris replied. "Then I went to sleep. Can I sleep now, sir?"
The lieutenant nodded, and Harris gratefully rolled over and fell straight asleep. The lieutenant stood up and made his way to the door, turning back to look at Harris before he left. Corporal Harris had been a fine soldier. He'd been stolid and dependable and honest. Most of all, he'd been 36 years of age. He may still have been stolid and dependable and honest, but the lieutenant was fairly sure that Harris wasn't a fine soldier anymore, and that he was now, in fact, a five-year-old child. Admittedly, that was through no fault of his own. "What am I going to tell the group captain?" was the lieutenant's initial thought, closely followed by, "What am I going to tell Harris's wife?" The warrant officer was waiting outside the sick bay.
"Can you see why I didn't like to say anything, sir?" he asked.
The lieutenant nodded.
"How sure are we that that is Harris?" he asked.
The warrant officer shrugged.
"He was found in Harris's uniform. He says he's Harris. He looks kind of like Harris. He's got Harris's accent, apart from the fact that he's tiny. He's Harris, sir."
There was still one thing bugging the lieutenant, apart from the fact that one of the base's most trusted NCOs had been regressed to infancy. Where exactly did we find him a cuddly rabbit? The lieutenant was both looking forward to and dreading his meeting with the intruders, or the prisoners as they had now become. He was looking forward to it because he'd see what kind of person had managed to break into the base, and they might have some explanation as to what was going on. On the other hand, he was dreading it for precisely the same reasons. Still, it had to be done, so he took a deep breath, straightened his uniform, put on his most intimidating, serious expression, and stepped into the interview room. The prisoners were not what the lieutenant had expected, although he wasn't quite sure what he had been expecting, other than not these two. He fixed the pair of them with his most intimidating, serious stare. One of the prisoners smiled warmly back. The other one wore a slightly confused expression, as though he recognised the lieutenant from somewhere and was trying to place him. The fact that the lieutenant knew he'd never seen him before in his life didn't stop him from trying to remember where they'd met. The man appeared to be in his 30s, but at the same time looked to be very old. It was the eyes. There was something in his gaze that suggested he'd seen more than the lieutenant ever had or ever would. Or maybe it was a trick of the light. He had shoulder-length hair that made him look as if he was trying to imitate Lord Byron, an impression not helped by the fact that he seemed to be actually dressed like Lord Byron. He was decidedly not the kind of person the lieutenant would have expected to break into a secure military base.
but then neither was his companion. The other prisoner, the one who was cheerily smiling at him in response to his intimidating, serious stare, was a girl. Quite a pretty girl, the lieutenant would have happily noted, had he met her under any other circumstances. She couldn't be much more than 18 or 19. She should have seemed like a perfectly sweet, normal girl, but her clothes made Lord Byron look quite down to earth. She was wearing the kind of sparkly purple catsuit that people wore in science fiction shows on television, underneath a black leather jacket. Her hair was cut short, and the lieutenant had to admit it looked good on her.
"I hope you two realise that you're in a lot of trouble,"
he said in a voice which he hoped was stern and official, but also charming.
"Oh, I don't know,"
said the man dressed as Lord Byron.
"As far as trouble goes, I'd say we've been in far more."
"Oh, yes," said the girl. "This is refreshingly light and straightforward, as trouble we've been in goes."
"There you are, you see,"
said the man, now also smiling at the lieutenant.
"We're not in so much trouble as you think we are, so there's really nothing to worry about. Though, of course, it's nice that you were concerned, Captain."
"It's Lieutenant," said the Lieutenant, again wishing that he could be asleep. Maybe he was asleep, and this was all a dream. That would mean that he'd somehow dreamt up these two, though, and what would that say about him?
"I don't think the two of you appreciate just how much trouble you're in."
"I'm sure this is all just a simple misunderstanding," the man said, still smiling. The Lieutenant couldn't quite believe that he'd said that. But then he still couldn't quite believe that the pair of them were there at all.
"A misunderstanding? You were found in a restricted area of a top-security military base in the small hours of the morning during a high alert while standing over the unconscious body of a soldier who has now turned into a 5-year-old, while holding..."
At this point, the lieutenant looked down at the table to see exactly what they'd been holding when they'd been caught. Perhaps they would help to make sense of the night's events. What he saw seemed to dash his hopes.
A butterfly net, a small white plastic sphere with a tiny hole in the centre, and half a packet of rich tea biscuits.
He looked up at the pair of faces smiling innocently across the table at him.
"Do you have anything to say for yourselves?"
The girl turned to her companion.
"When he puts it like that, Doctor, it sounds almost as if we'd done something wrong,"
the other one replied.
"You may have a point. Is your soldier all right?"
The lieutenant bristled.
"He said something about there being a big bug, but we found him a cuddly rabbit, and he's now sleeping quite peacefully in sick bay. Now, are you going to cooperate?"
The one called Doctor turned to his companion.
"Do you know, Charlie, I think we probably ought to explain things to the lieutenant," he said.
The girl, Charlie, didn't seem convinced.
"Doctor, I'm not sure if you've considered this, but there is just the slightest chance that he might not believe us. It's a slim chance, I know, but it's one that we ought to consider."
"Nonsense," said the doctor, smiling at the lieutenant. "I'm sure he is a reasonable, understanding and open-minded man who will trust us if we just tell him the truth."
The lieutenant felt he was expected to say something at this point.
"I just need you to tell me how you got in here and why, and whether you had anything to do with the incident on the training exercise yesterday."
"What incident on the training exercise?" Charlie asked, but the doctor interrupted before the lieutenant could answer.
"Incident on the training exercise! Ah, now I know when we are. Well, that explains why there's an army lieutenant on an RAF base. And it means that you can rest assured that the incident had nothing to do with us. It'll all get sorted out soon, I'm sure."
"It is nothing to do with us, then?" Charlie seemed to be looking for reassurance.
"Of course it isn't,"
the doctor said.
"We only got here this morning. And besides, the Time Roach is hardly going to be interested in fighter jets, is it?"
If he'd been more awake, the lieutenant might have remembered that he'd not mentioned fighter jets. But it was nearly 3 a.m, and he'd been having a very difficult night. So he just said,
"I still need to know what you were doing here, how you got in... and I assume I'll need to know what in God's name a time roach is."
"It's sort of an insect thing that lives..." Charlie began, but then she tailed off.
"It's sort of difficult to explain," she said, shrugging apologetically.
"I'm not entirely sure where to start." "Begin at the beginning," the lieutenant said, tired enough that quoting Lewis Carroll seemed like a good idea. "And go on till you come to the end, then stop." The girl smiled as he said it. But it was the doctor who spoke.
"All right, then. But there are a couple of things that you'll need to accept from the start.
The lieutenant nodded, and the man went on. I'm an alien. Charlie is from 1930, and we have a time machine. The lieutenant sat staring at them for a moment. He stood up, walked to the door, opened it, and turned to one of the two men stationed outside. Jenkins, he said, lay on some tea, would you? I have a feeling we're going to need it. We were in the TARDIS, the doctor's story began. In the what? Asked the lieutenant. He felt he ought to get to grips with as much as possible as quickly as possible, or the entire story might get away from him. The TARDIS, repeated the doctor. She's our ship, our time machine. We'd just left William Shakespeare in 16th century Warwickshire. Lovely boy, very keen mind, great potential, I thought. Doctor, Charlie chastised him. This is the beginning, is it? Asked the lieutenant, very glad to have a cup of tea to depend on. At least that would always make sense, which is more than the prisoner's story was doing. It's a beginning. The doctor seemed to be trying to be as difficult as possible, and it's the one that matters right now. So we were in the TARDIS, having left the 16th century. There was a lot of turbulence in the time vortex, probably remnants of the time distortion we've been encountering recently. At this, he and Charlie exchanged awkward glances. Once we were through the worst of the turbulence, Charlie disappeared off to have a lie down or something.
I did not disappear off to have a lie down, Charlie seemed quite indignant.
I went to the wardrobe to change. I told you where I was going.
You did?
The doctor appeared genuinely surprised to learn this.
Yes, I did.
Charlie did not seem impressed. You were probably too busy talking to the TARDIS and stroking the console. She turned conspiratorially to the lieutenant and whispered, He does that.
I do not.
Now it was the doctor's turn to sound indignant. Well, not often. So, Charlie went off to the wardrobe.
Which does explain the catsuit, actually.
Oh, thank you for noticing, Charlie said rather pointedly. Do you like it?
I think it looks nice. Don't you think it looks nice, Lieutenant?
The doctor appealed to the lieutenant, who readily admitted that the catsuit looked nice, but pointed out that they hadn't yet explained what they were doing on the base.
Well, while Charlie was off in the wardrobe, I checked the TARDIS systems to make sure the turbulence hadn't done any damage to her. The old girl seemed all right, but there'd been a small breach in the force field, and the sensors were picking up a time roach in the wardrobe.
Which would explain why you saw it first, now I come to think of it. The doctor turned to Charlie and smiled the smile of a man who had just worked something out and was feeling quite pleased with himself. She returned the glare of a girl who had not appreciated being the first to encounter a time roach, whatever a time roach was. The lieutenant thought it was about time he cleared up that point once and for all.
What exactly is a time roach? He asked, knowing, just knowing, that he wasn't going to like the answer.
Now that is an excellent question, said the doctor. Don't you think that's an excellent question, Charlie?
I think he'd rather you answered it, doctor, said Charlie with a sigh.
The lieutenant got the sense that her job was to stop the doctor from being distracted by his own puppyish enthusiasm.
Yes, of course, I'm sorry.
Time roaches, said the doctor, his voice suddenly becoming serious, are very interesting, very irritating, and potentially very dangerous creatures. They look not unlike an ant if ants were born the size of rats. They live in the vortex, the raw material of life itself, and latch onto ships as they pass through it, feeding on the temporal energy they give off. All very harmless, as long as they don't get inside.
And if they do get inside? The lieutenant asked.
If they get inside a time ship, or out of the vortex and into the timeline itself, then they panic. Hopelessly out of their comfort zone, they try to do the only thing they know how to. Feed. They feed on the personal time streams of anyone they encounter, regressing them back into their own past, or progressing them into their own future. They aren't fussy.
The lieutenant thought he understood.
So one of them tried to eat Corporal Harris and turned him into a 5-year-old? He asked.
The doctor nodded.
When I detected the one on board the TARDIS, I put her into temporal stasis. That meant she was outside the vortex, so no more roaches could get in, but at the same time not fully materialised, so that this one couldn't get out.
The lieutenant wanted to interject with,
"Except it did." But he suspected that it wouldn't really help at this point. Charlie took over the story. Meanwhile, I was trying things on in the wardrobe when this giant ant thing leaps out of nowhere and tries to clamp itself to my face.
She didn't sound terribly thrilled by the experience, it had to be said, and the lieutenant could hardly blame her. Then it let go and jumped off, almost as if it didn't like me. I don't know why. She and the doctor exchanged glances again. The lieutenant got the feeling that they both knew why, but didn't want to talk about it. He considered pressing the point, but Charlie was speaking again. "So I ran up to the console room, where the doctor was already tinkering with that thing." She pointed at the sphere on the table. The lieutenant picked it up to look more closely at it. "It's a time trap," the doctor explained. "Quite a crude one, I'll be honest, but it works just as well as the branded ones. It contains the creature, heals it if it's hurt, and places it in temporal stasis. It's quite handy." The lieutenant slowly put the sphere down. He wasn't sure exactly how it would contain the creature, but he didn't want to risk ending up inside something the size of a tennis ball. "So you built this thing and then went off to catch the time roach?" he asked.
"Well, we needed a few supplies first," said the doctor.
"The time roach was hardly likely to willingly crawl out of wherever it had hidden and into our trap. So, not wanting to risk using an actual time stream as bait, in case it went horribly wrong, I grabbed a packet of rich tea." At this, he indicated the half-empty packet of biscuits. The lieutenant picked it up and examined it. There was nothing out of the ordinary about the packet whatsoever. "Time roaches are fond of rich tea, are they?" he asked, perhaps a little more sarcastically than he might have done had it not been 3 a.m.
"You'd be surprised," replied the doctor.
The lieutenant looked at the biscuits. He looked down at the cup of tea in front of him. He looked back at the biscuits.
"Shall I pass them round?"
asked Charlie, putting the lieutenant out of his misery. "And the butterfly net?" asked the lieutenant as he dunked his biscuit. Charlie said something in reply which sounded like,
"I felt safer with it."
But the lieutenant couldn't be quite sure, since she had herself just taken a bite of dunked biscuit. The doctor seemed to think that was explanation enough, and continued,
"So we went down into the TARDIS to hunt the time roach. By this point, the sensors were picking it up in the library. Unfortunately, it was actually under the library, in an awful lot of wiring and circuitry, which it was finding very tasty indeed."
The lieutenant could see where this was going. "So it broke your ship?" he asked. The doctor winced slightly.
"I wouldn't say broke. The TARDIS is a tough old girl. The self-repair systems will have her right as rain by now, but it did force her to come out of temporal stasis and land just outside your base."
"So your time ship is outside this base right now?" the lieutenant asked. The doctor nodded.
"About 300 yards from where your men found us, I'd say.
So if I sent my men to go and search the perimeter of the base along that section, they'd find a time machine?"
The lieutenant hoped in vain that he'd be able to call their bluff and get them to admit their story was rubbish. Unfortunately, he was quite sure that they weren't bluffing. The story was incredible enough to be blatant lies, and yet surely no one would make up a story that combined vagueness, impossibility, insanity, and childishness in such a rich blend. Besides which, the state of Corporal Harris was pretty conclusive evidence that something which should have been impossible was actually happening. As he suspected, they weren't bluffing.
"Oh yes, they should be able to find her without any trouble," the doctor said, smiling. "Although," he thought about it for a moment, "you should probably tell them that she does look exactly like a police box." A police box. The lieutenant was hoping he had misheard the doctor. He hadn't. "A police box?" he asked again, just to make sure he was right.
"A police box with a wardrobe and a library?"
"Well, you see,"
said Charlie, and the lieutenant knew that this would be another sentence which explained everything while making nothing clearer at all.
"It's bigger on the inside."
There was no point pursuing this one, the lieutenant knew. He stood up, went to the door, opened it, and turned again to one of the men outside. "Jenkins, take some men over to where they found Corporal Harris. See if you can find a police box anywhere nearby." To his credit, Jenkins didn't question this order. The lieutenant returned to his seat and looked at the sweetly smiling faces of Charlie and the doctor.
"So your police box landed just outside the base?"
he asked. "That's right," said the doctor, beaming brightly, as if proud of the lieutenant for having accepted this.
"All right then. How did the time roach get out of the police box?"
The lieutenant thought that was a reasonable question.
"I mean, you obviously didn't open the door and let it out, and presumably you had sealed the breach it originally got in through."
The doctor's smile became somehow fixed, as though his face had been paused while his mind worked out what expression it needed to wear. The lieutenant wasn't the only one to notice this change. Charlie seemed to have sensed it, because she turned to him and asked, "You did reseal the force field, Doctor?"
"Well..."
The doctor's face settled on a look of apologetic guilt. Charlie sighed.
"You didn't reseal the force field, did you?" "Well, I was distracted by the fact there was a time roach in the TARDIS. I started putting the trap together and it just slipped my mind."
"So what happened?" asked the lieutenant. He was hoping that Jenkins would come back soon and say that there was a police box on the edge of the base. At least that would mean he wasn't raving mad for believing their story. "After we landed, it took us a minute to discover the time roach had gone," continued the doctor. "Once we realised it had managed to slip out, we went straight back up to the console room and out onto your airbase, where you found Corporal Harris." This wasn't a question. The lieutenant could guess how the rest of the story went. "Yes," said the doctor. "Unfortunately, the time roach had found him first. We managed to get it off him before it drained his entire time stream."
"I'm sure he'll be very grateful to know that,"
said the lieutenant, taking another biscuit from the packet to dunk.
"Then before we could catch it, the rest of your men turned up and apprehended us,"
said the doctor, seeming a little indignant at having been arrested for breaking into a secure military base at 2 a.m.
"The time roach scurried off, and we were brought in here."
Before the lieutenant could reply, there was a knock at the door. It wasn't the regimented, sensible knocking of a soldier reporting back. It was the panicked, desperate knocking of someone who needed to get in. The lieutenant stood up, hurried to the door and opened it. Jenkins fell in and collapsed to the floor. At least the lieutenant assumed it was Jenkins. He was wearing Jenkins's uniform, but his hair was white, and a six-legged, armoured rodent creature about the size of a pug was clamped to his face. The lieutenant kicked at the creature, which flew off Jenkins's now wrinkled face and landed exactly halfway between the lieutenant and the doctor. It looked between them, trying to work out which was the most tempting target. It was growing in size even as the lieutenant watched. Suddenly, it was about the size of a Labrador.
"The biscuits!"
shouted the doctor, grabbing the sphere off the table.
"Throw us the biscuits!"
The lieutenant looked down. He was still holding the packet of biscuits. The time roach was sniffing now and slowly turning to look towards him.
"Throw us the biscuits, Mike!"
shouted the doctor. As the time roach turned to face him, Lieutenant Mike Yates hurled the packet of biscuits across the room. The time roach turned, following their arc across the air and into Charlie's hands. Charlie immediately emptied the packet onto the floor, and the time roach scurried over and started to nibble at them. In the doctor's hands, the sphere clicked open. The time roach looked up. As the sphere fell towards it, blue light streaming from inside, catching the creature in its beam and drawing it in. Then, the time roach was gone. And the sphere sat on the floor, first wobbling, then shaking, then still. It went ding, which Yates found strangely appropriate.
"Well, I think that went rather well,"
said the doctor, grinning across at Yates. Yates found he couldn't help but grin back. The doctor picked up the sphere and shook it. A shining gold dust fell from it.
"Now, if we just wait a moment, we should see..."
"There we go," said the doctor, looking down at Jenkins. Jenkins sat up. To Mike's relief, he was the right age again.
"And I'll wager your Corporal Harris will be back to normal now as well,"
said the doctor, grinning.
"Shall we have some more tea?"
The group captain looked up from his lieutenant's report. Yates couldn't bring himself to meet his eye, instead fixing his gaze on a point above his head.
"Am I about to reach the part where you let them go, Lieutenant?"
"Yes, sir," Yates said, not daring to look down. "They'd been telling the truth and we caught the thing. It seemed like the best course of action.
To escort them back into a police box, promise not to mention it outside this base, and watch them disappear?"
Yates dared to look down now. The group captain was smiling. Yates didn't quite know what to make of that.
"Did you believe them, Lieutenant?"
"I saw the time roach, sir."
"No, before that," said the group captain. "When you first heard their story, did you believe them?"
"Permission to speak freely, sir?" The group captain nodded, so Yates continued. "At that time in the morning,
After seeing what had happened to Harris, I didn't know what to believe. What they were telling me was clearly impossible.
So you did believe them then?
The group captain had always seemed to have the uncanny ability to read Yates's mind. For the first time, Mike began to wonder if the group captain actually could read his mind. It wouldn't be the strangest thing he'd come across today. The group captain was still talking.
You were willing to accept that a pair of time travellers had arrived outside the base while chasing a time roach through their ship. That it had eaten Corporal Harris's time stream and turned him into a child?
Yates suspected that this conversation wasn't going to end well for him.
Yes, sir, I was.
The group captain was silent for a moment.
I spoke to London about our missing fighter, he said quite amiably.
Yates was thrown. Perhaps he didn't know where this conversation was going after all.
They put me in touch with UNIT.
UNIT, sir? Yates didn't know the name.
The United Nations Intelligence Task Force,
explained the group captain.
Apparently they deal with the odd, the unexplained, anything on Earth or even beyond.
He let that last sentence hang there. And now at last, Yates knew where the conversation was going. It was a much nicer destination than the one he'd envisaged earlier.
Things like our missing fighter, sir, he asked.
The group captain nodded.
And things like time roaches,
he told Yates.
They're coming up to investigate the missing fighter, and they've requested a liaison officer. I'm assigning you. Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart's in charge of them. Don't know him myself, but Chunky Gilmore says he's a good sort. Oh, and their scientific advisor calls himself the Doctor.
The group captain smiled at Yates, who tried to keep his face blank.
So you shouldn't have any trouble believing every word he says.
That young lieutenant was nice, said Charlie, as the doctor hunted around for somewhere to store the time trap.
Who? Mike Yates?
He called back to her.
Lovely man. Always helpful. Funny running into him, though. He's never mentioned it before.
You know him, then?
She asked. The doctor appeared again, grinning.
Know him?
He asked.
He's one of my oldest friends.
Or he will be.
Foreshadowing by Julian Richards was read by India Fisher and is a Big Finish production.